Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducrosse.
What's up, everybody? Welcome. You're listening to Sean and Tristan Ducrosse, a.k.a. The Sports Warriors. What's up, my dudes? Sean, it's showtime or is it one time? Keith Thurman, it's relatively Keith Thurman's time. In boxing, you only get those fights that come once in a lifetime. And this perhaps was his once in a lifetime. See, it's interesting when you put these fighters, because we haven't seen these caliber of fights since Arturo Gatti, Mickey Ward days. And when you saw Sean Porter, I mean, it didn't even start from the Sean Porter and the Keith Thurman fight. It actually started in the undercard when you had Derek Hurd taking on Oscar Molina. That's where ultimately this card kind of took its tail, because I think that when you get these two kids put on a show like they did and a clinic like they did, I think you look at professionals and Keith Thurman and Sean Porter, dude, we're not going to be shown up. You can't. But Sean Porter had so much coming into this fight, because a lot of people thought that, okay, well, he lost to Kell Brook, and nobody quite understood where he was going next. So when you look at Kell Brook and you look at Sean Porter fight, and then you look at Keith Thurman and Sean Porter, Keith Thurman was able to, I want to say, not put a masterful performance together, but he put a performance together enough to sway the judges. Because when I was looking at it, I almost thought that this should have gone to the way of a draw instead of going completely to Keith Thurman, because I don't think Keith Thurman did a lot to establish himself that way, that he completely dominated the fight.
Yeah, and I can completely agree with you on that one. I had it 105 to 104, Keith Thurman going into the round 11, and then in round 12, I had Porter stealing that round. I just thought Sean Porter did more in that round to go ahead and warrant the fact that it was a draw. But unfortunately, somewhere along the line, they gave an extra round to Keith Thurman that I could not see where he gave it to him, unless it was maybe round 8 maybe? Or round 7, maybe, that's where they kind of switched a little bit towards Thurman. Because when you look back and you transition to the later rounds, I thought Sean Porter put more of a brawling type clinic and was putting his power in on Keith Thurman in that fight. So when you look at that, that's where I thought he got the edge. I didn't see Keith Thurman pull away from this fight. I saw Sean Porter getting inside on Keith Thurman and working the body. I did not see these masterful strikes. I did not see a boxing clinic from Keith Thurman. But what I saw was a guy that was not afraid to get into the dirty corners with Sean Porter. That's what interested me the most was, wait a second. He's getting into the nitty-gritty portion of this boxing fight. I didn't think he could do that with Sean Porter. But he did, and that's the thing that was a little bit interesting for me, was that when you look at it was perhaps one of the better boxing fights this side since Canelo and Amir Khan. I mean, Canelo and Triple G.
See, I like this matchup for two reasons, because it was able to showcase the world that boxing is still relevant to a certain degree.
Absolutely.
Because when you think about boxing, you think about all the titles. You know, Keith Thurman said perfectly at the end when he said that, hey, let's just bring all the belts. Even Dante Wilder is now saying, you know what? We need 1,000 titles. Let's get all the big heavyweights. Let's get all the titles on one person and unify them. That's smart thinking. So why not do that for the welterweight title? Why? The welterweight division is so stacked and so heavy that the 147, they have
much talent going for them. See, you talk about Killian Dane saying that he wants to unify all titles. He wants to fight Keith Thurman. He wants Keith Thurman's title. And you can't blame the guy because Kell Brook is 36-0 with 25 KOs. He already owns the IBF title. He then wants to go after the WBA title that is held by Keith Thurman. Not to mention that he wants to go after Danny Garcia's WBC title. And Thurman wants that fight. Thurman wants Danny Garcia. But Danny Garcia is going to get Amir Khan. That's the number one fight for that title right now. So if you're Keith Thurman, you look at a Kell Brook fight. You look at that fight. Kell Brook looks at that fight. But you also can't sleep on another guy that's making his time through the welterweight ranks, that is making his name known, and that's Errol Spence Jr.
People are sleeping on Errol Spence like it's going out of style.
Errol Spence Jr. is going to fight Leonard Bundu in a title eliminator fight. What I don't get is Errol Spence in a title eliminator fight. When or draw, Errol Spence is a top contender. So Errol Spence should get a shot against a Keith Thurman.
Absolutely.
In my eyes, he should get that chance to go ahead and solidify his name at the top of the welterweight ranks. So that way, you know what, then there's that eliminator shot. He hasn't even gotten a shot title yet. Why is he in this area to get booted right now? That boggles my mind. But the boxing in the welterweight, it's a feeding frenzy, and Kell Brook is leading the charge right now. See, Canelo in the middleweight division did the same thing. Spoke up and said that he wanted to be the best, wanted to beat the best. He went to Amir Khan, then he backed out of the fight. So look at everything else that's going on. You just see that if Kell Brook's going to talk the game, it stays right there. Then, yeah, Tristan, you go ahead and you look at the one that stood out to me, Jared Hurd versus Oscar Molina fight. You're talking about a guy who's hungry, talking about a guy who wants to be at the top of the food chain. This has the it factor.
Sean, I looked at Jared Hurd against Oscar Molina, and I love that fight because I was telling you that you had to watch this fight because you want to talk about a fight that was tall and lengthy and had that distance. And you would think a guy that was that tall would be able to use his length and measure out his opponent. But no, what was interesting is that he fights as if he's an outside fighter, but yet he was inside that pocket the whole entire night. And one reason why I say that people should watch this fight, because, like I said, it wasn't completely masterful, but was so interesting to this fight was that you had a man that looked like he was a natural outside fighter. Inside that clinch, the way that he was able to range when he had that distance was incredible. Because he was able to, at will, pick apart an opponent inside the trenches. And when you see that, you don't see it too often. You always talk about that you have to be able to box inside. And you can't be afraid. When you want to see a clinic on how to box inside, just look at Jared Hurd. Just look at him. The fact that he was in there and he was just basically slapping Oscar Molina, it was one of those things that I was like, dude, straight up getting worked. So go back, watch that fight. Go back and watch Keith Thurman versus Sean Porter, and you'll see what a strategic performance it was by both parties. Two different styles clashing at two opportune times and making boxing what it is. For that, you got to give props. And where PBC is going with this, with what they put on, is incredible. The fact that you've got a champion, Keith Thurman, who came out and said, I'm not going to fight on TV, on pay-per-view. I'm going to fight on free TV. Because I grew up when there was no pay-per-view. Right.
Couldn't afford a pay-per-view.
When you could see a Sugar Ray Leonard or Oscar De La Hoya on live TV.
Yeah.
That's what made it interesting. That's why people bought into it. And right now to kind of graduate to where it is right now, it ultimately had to. You look at Keith Thurman, you look at Errol Spence Jr., you can look at Sean Porter, you can look at all these guys that are coming through the ranks right now. And one reason why it has so many people chomping at the bit and talking about it is exactly because it's on free TV. It gives
people interested in it. People were interested and invested in these two fighters. You know, people were talking about the Jarrett Hurd and Oscar Molina fight. You look at the Deontay Wilder situation right now is that he's on and he's talking about going for a guy that just fought on, I think it was on Showtime, HBO, can't remember his name, but they're looking to unify the titles. He's looking at Tyson. Tony, I think is his name.
Tyson Fury?
Yes, Tyson Fury. Looking at him to take another title off of him. So you got now you got multiple fighters that are thinking, okay, well, long-term about the sport instead of what is best for business right now. Right now it's we need to put interest, everybody into what makes a good fight a good fight. So why not? People don't want to see these makeshift fights. Oh, well, I want to build up this guy, so I'm going to feed him this guy. Fight fans see right through that BS now.
They do.
And seeing right through that BS, okay? We already saw the BS between Canelo and Triple G. The inability to come together for a...
The other one is that Amir Khan came to the plate and took on a beast in Canelo. But you begin to wonder, why is it that Danny Garcia is still waiting to fight off against Amir Khan?
Right.
Why is that fight not happening? Did he really get some screws knocked loose to the point that he's afraid to come back right now? That he needs to make sure he's 100% dialed in? Is that what's going on? There's so many question marks that are going into boxing right now in the middleweight division, the welterweight division, about what's going on because now apparently there's stall tactics. They're stalling for this, that, and the other. Keith Thurman says he'll be watching the Earl. Who's not?
Every person is going to have their TV glued to that fight. Because at this point, this is what you need.
August 21st, it's going down Earl Spence versus Leonard Badu, and you're going to see Keith Thurman potentially being in attendance for that fight. So if that fight goes Earl Spence's way, is Keith Thurman going to be in that ring? Are they going to announce that fight right then and there?
Yeah, see, I think they have to at this point. But I also think that for the two top prospects, Jarrett Hurd, I think that that's going to be an interesting situation for him too. Is because we're talking about who Keith Thurman can fight or who Sean Porter can fight. But Jarrett Hurd, I think that within a year or a year and a half, this guy's going to be a title contender. And people's going to have to remember the name Jarrett Hurd. And I think he's going to get either the Chalo brothers, which are identical twins. And I had to double take for a minute because I thought we were identical. I look at the Chalo twins and I'm like, both their names are spelled exactly the same except for one has an A and one has an E. That's it. That's the only thing that separates them apart. Because they fight the same, they talk the same, they look the same, they even spell their name close. It's crazy that you have two identical twins and they both hold titles. So I think that we're going to start seeing the Chalo twins coming up the ranks. I think one of them or Jarrett Hurd at some point going to get Miguel Cotto, and that's going to skyrocket the division for the 155. That's where we're at right now with the longevity now of the super middleweight as well as the division. Because we're now talking, they're now gaining traction. That's boxing right now. They got momentum and they're trying to ride the wave without rocking the boat, so to speak. And they're teetering right now on rocking the boat, rocking the momentum they do have. But you know what? We'll be right back.
The Sports Warriors right here on Blog Talk Radio and YouTube.tv.
Excelsior in Paris Rex. Live long and prosper. Up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl. Not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the DuCross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DuCross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody, we are back. You're listening live right now to the Sports Warriors. We are your boys. Realest combat sports talk show right now on the airwaves. It's with us, Sean and Tristan DuCross. Sean, we have an incredible show, and it's only going to get better from here on out. We got the fallout of Dynamite 2 that happened, or Bellator 157, or Bellator Kickbox, whatever you want to call it. It drew less than their average.
When you've got Bellator Dynamite 2 and you're trying to get what you put on the first time, you had to go balls out, but you only put it in St. Louis, Missouri. You didn't have the star power draw, so to speak. So, of course, it was going to draw less. Nobody's that interested in Rampage Jackson anymore, and that's a shame. He was up against a guy named Ishii, who at the time wasn't a known commodity, so to speak. You have the same vibe around the Dynamite. It was just another Bellator event that featured kickboxing. But what I don't get about this format is the switching from MMA, kickboxing, MMA, kickboxing. MMA, kickboxing.
Why couldn't you just put one ring, whether it be in a circle or a squared circle?
Either way, I think you should have just said, you know what, we're going to have a kickboxing MMA. That too. This isn't WCW War Games. This isn't. You don't get two rings, smash them together, put a cage over the top of them, and say, here you go, team one, team two, you fight.
Or the other. Alternative is the fact that, you know what, let's go ahead and do all at the beginning, or do all MMA at the beginning,
mix it up. But when you go from MMA, that gets you all amped and going because so-and-so just got knocked out, and then you go, oh, kickboxing, all right, let's sit back, let's get comfortable, because it's going to be a little bit of a long fight, and there's going to be some lull in there. It gets tiring on the average fan. The average fan, you lose them during kickboxing. You're hoping you get them back. Although, if you look at the ratings, the Bellator kickboxing outperformed the Bellator MMA. So think about this, Sean. We've had several talks about Muay Thai mixed martial arts.
Right? Yeah.
I find it funny that here you go again. On paper, you look at the ratings. Fans love the bang persona. The issue that we hear now is that when you break down the ratings, you look at Rampage Quint Jackson versus E,
really?
Did nothing to draw anything. So now you worry about his drawing power. You worry about what he can bring to the table. But when you look at Rampage, you look at Kevin Ross, you look at Joe Schilling, you look at those guys in the kickboxing atmosphere, those are names. People wanted to see those fights. So you look at it, you all of a sudden turn over, you get the lead in from MMA into kickboxing. People were all for it, man. All for it. That's what you were looking for. 601,000. 648,000 tuned in for kickboxing. Here you go. That pop that you're getting now for the world and the boxing world, it's starting to gain traction.
Well, I do get
TV, and they told us, hey, the number one rating on their network, hands down, is
Dynamite.
And I get that what Bellator doing with kickboxing, guys like Daniels, Kevin Ross, among others, is starting to gravitate towards that. I get where you're going with that, but to put them one-on-one off is the thing that turns off. That's the issue I have. You're trying to gain momentum, and you're losing the fans. You're losing the fans. You've got so kickboxing is a side that fans are gravitating towards, the MMA side, then maybe finish off with the kickboxing and highlight it. Because maybe you realize Texans are not selling in front of that. The Kevin Ross is highlighting the Raymond Daniels, highlighting Joe Schilling. Maybe that's the proper way to go. That's the biggest question
but
I have.
But do you know what's funny, though? That Rampage can't draw, but guys like Kimbo Slice, Shamrock, and all drew far better than Rampage Jackson, who keep in mind, came in better shape, came in with a understanding that, heck, this is where I want to be in a platform, but yet he performed at the Emerald level that we all knew that he could. Instead, he stood there and taunted because Ishii wouldn't engage with him. As a professional fighter, you weren't doing anything either to engage in that. So why are you throwing your hands up, turning your back to the fighter, engaging with the fans like, well, I'm trying, but he's not. But in this fight, too, is that how serious did Rampage go in this fight? When Rampage came in at heavyweight, Rampage looked out of shape compared to Ishii. Ishii looked like a jacked up jackrabbit that was looking to take him down. So you're beginning to wonder, where can Rampage go? I believe that if they would have put the fight on in Japan, Rampage would have drawn. Fans here just don't care anymore about Rampage. It's interesting to see, why do fans care about Tito Ortiz and they don't care about Rampage? Why do fans care about Ken Shamrock and not Rampage? Where did the Rampage persona, where did his image, where did everything on him? Because he's been off for 465 days? So he became Mr. Irrelevant? Is that where it all went wrong?
But I'm also going to call. Let's talk about this, John. Who gave Rampage all three times? Whatever you are doing, please lay off on it come showtime. Because that was the most ridiculous. A 27 for Rampage? Come on. Let's be real. He lost that fight, and he got W. I had that score 2-1. Two rounds to Ishii, and Rampage won. That's as bad as a rob that King Mo LaWall got against Quentin Rampage Jackson. Dude, I was yelling at the TV going, how do you get it? But Rampage. So I guess it makes sense. But the thing that interested me the most was the fact that Michael Chandler knocked off Patricky Pitbull with a vicious right cross that just put him on his back. You look at Michael Chandler. There is something crazy about him when he fights in his home city of St. Louis, Missouri. There is a difference to that fight that when you look at it, like, well, Michael Chandler, welcome back to the 150 division. Because, in fact, when you look at this fight and you look at what Chandler did, I knocked the guy. The guy came out fresh and ready, looked like a beast. I'm going to poke the bear a little bit. You do realize that he picked on the weakest of the two brothers. Michael Chandler, I'm not going to take anything away from Michael Chandler, but that dude's a beast. And to see him come back and regain the title, all the power to him. He beat Patricky Pitbull, who's coming off a win against a guy that
has no identity himself, which is Ryan Couture.
You know,
so I mean, and that was the worst knockout probably of Couture's career. And now flip the script, you get sandwiched by him. And Michael Chandler jumping on top of the cage, going through it with the other pit bull, with Patricio, and he said, and he said, basically told Patricio, hey, dude, step up to one, step up to 155, and I will smack you back down to your 145, and I will hurt you worse than I hurt your brother. At what point do you start thinking, if I'm Scott Coker, I'm going, I want that fight? Well, at what point, if you're a mad scientist and Scott Coker, who has the creative mind to throw random matches together that makes you go, okay, and then it turns out to be great, at what point is enough enough where you let Patricio continue to run his mouth in front of other fighters?
Oh, true.
And then not get a fight? We saw that with Will Brooks. Now we're seeing that with Chandler. Will Brooks left for the UFC. But I'm just saying, at what point do you tell him, you know what, move up, we're going to make you fight a Michael Chandler, it is what it is, and give the fans what they want. Because at some point, Patricio needs to just stop talking. There needs to be an end all to end all.
Okay, John, I love you. You're my brother.
But I would have done the same thing too, homie.
I
would get knocked out. I'm on that cage going, dude, let's go. Let's go. We'll go right now. But the difference between you and I is that if I say let's go, best believe we're going to go. Straight up. If I'm going to get knocked out, I'm going to get knocked out. But if I'm going to brawl, I'm going to brawl. But the interesting thing is that Patricky and Patricio is exactly like you and I. Exactly like everybody. We're going to stand up for one another. We're going to defend one another. The thing, too, is one of us is good at one thing. The other one isn't.
Right.
It's just a reality of the situation. One of, as a brother, identical twin, whatever it may be, one of you is going to be better at something than the other one.
Absolutely.
Just the way it is. That's what comes down with Patricky Pitbull. Why he was even in the realm of Michael Chandler for this title shot is beyond me. I would have went out of the way and given this title shot Michael Chandler to Josh Thompson before I would have given it to Patricky.
See, Josh Thompson, again, gets injured before the title fight.
Like, you can't make this stuff up. You can't with Josh, with the punk, because he's thrown into a spotlight, expected to excel at, and something happens along the way to derail him. Here's a man. Again, here we go again with Michael Chandler talking. I like this guy. I want to hear more of him talking, because he looked and said, hey, Josh Thompson, I want to be your Huckleberry.
Right? Who said that?
At this point, you want to see these two fight. You want to. Because nobody wants to see a Benson Henderson go from 75 to getting to basically look like he was a sparring partner.
To Andre Kurkowski.
Yes.
Or Scott.
So let's pause on that for a minute, because there's no way he should go from 175, look like a sparring partner, drop down to 155 to get another title shot. Dude, you failed that one already.
So, I like Benson Henderson. He brings a lot to the table. But when you look at the drawing board, you look at Benson Henderson announcing that he's dropping back down to 155. I mean, come on. You only can hope that he can regain some steam, or else he's looking like a genius saying that he wants somebody that was in the top 15. And right now, Benson Henderson is not looking like he's in the top 15.
No.
Not even in Bellator. So you're hoping that at 155, he regains his steam.
Mojo brings that toothpick swag and brings it back and dominates at the 155.
And can we just take the mic away from that guy? Because he's not very intellectual person when he's actually carrying on a conversation. I don't know if he was camera shot or what, with Sean on one side and Jimmy Smith on the other. I don't get it, but
I'm digging the new Chingo tee by Jimmy Smith, though.
Right? The little thing right here?
Yeah, yeah.
Pulls it off. Some of it works. Some of it doesn't. Jimmy Smith can pull it off.
But what apparently is working is then you go back to, let's go back to what's not working. And what's not working is the fact that
Matt Matrone's stand-up?
No. Joe Schilling can't buy himself a break. I never understood the hype behind Joe Stitch-em-up Schilling. Because ever since I've seen him fight, I'm not impressed outside of the knockout of Melvin Manoff in San Diego. That was the last time I was impressed. But I'm not impressed with Joe Schilling because I'm not impressed with the fact that Cato said that Joe Schilling is a big glove fighter. He's a small glove fighter, knocked him out with a Superman punch, then goes over to Joe Schilling's realm and knocks him out with a spinning back fist because Joe Schilling was chasing a guy down with his back exposed.
Dude, you can't keep calling people big glove fighters because you're a small glove fighter. You can't keep saying that. Somebody's going to crack you. And that's exactly what happened. He got cracked.
Cato hasn't been the hype train got derailed on him because of his flashy knockout last time. Cato's nothing special. Nothing. Off the juice, I don't think Schilling is that much more than, the sunglass wearing, I'm almost say the eyebrow raising. So much hype built up around him.
There is. And I just don't
and
see it.
And it's said that Cato got lucky. You said Cato got lucky. But like myself and my wife said about Cato, is that sometimes in the MMA field and kickboxing, whatever it may
that's
be.
That's all it takes.
Is that when you look at it, is that all it takes is to get that one shot that's lucky. You had to have known it was a bad idea from the get-go, when you're chasing a guy down when his back is to you, and you're running away, and you had to know chasing a guy like that is not the best idea. See, even if you just want to talk to your boys, Sean and Tristan Ducross, hit us up on Facebook, Sean and Tristan Ducross. You can add me on Tristan Ducross. I have a chat room going right now, but our boy Skippy Cohen said it best. You want to see what Joe Schilling is? Go to YouTube and look at Cody Walker, and you'll see what Joe Schilling really is. Because in order to become great, you have to be able to establish yourself. And you look at the caliber of fighters, that tells you who you are. That tells you exactly who you are. I'm sorry, it does. And everybody has this whole entire idea of what makes a star, because you put on a couple flashy highlights. And apparently you gave a couple people some stitches. That's how you got a nickname, Stitch 'em Up. But then again, we've talked highly of this one cat. So anybody that has followed us for a while and followed us when we were talking about Glory Kickboxing knows how outspoken we have been about this one particular kickboxer. Damon Effin Daniels. Showtime recognizes greatness. Bellator Kickboxing has a special guy that is feeding off the momentum that he has. The fact that he was disappointed that he didn't get a knockout in his first fight, to the fact that he got a knockout in this fight against Stefano Bruno with a spinning back kick to the ribs, it was marvelous. Something you don't see all the time. And when you see Raymond Daniels and you see everything that he's about, the flashing, it's just something you gravitate towards. Bruno in that fight was like, why are you stopping the fight? Why are you stopping the fight? It made no sense to stop the fight. But when you get kicked up again underneath your ribs and then you stopped fighting and you were running from the from Raymond Daniels, you had to stop.
Sean,
or else he would have gotten knocked out 10 times worse.
Again, you know what's coming with Raymond Daniels. You know it. You know you're going to get a flash kick. You know you're going to get sideways. You know it's coming. But it's funny because I
And I see Raymond Daniels doing a spinning back kick to the stomach area, misses it the first time, and you're thinking, he's going to do it again. Block him. Do something. But no, and he gets clipped again. Like, you see it coming. He telegraphed it. There's nothing you can do. So quick. So fluid. So good. You look back and you see what happened. You talk about evolution. You talk about growth. Kerry Melendez continues to grow at a rate. When you first saw her, you were like, I heard how good she was. But you know what? It just didn't happen. There was nothing appealing to her. But then she comes in, Bellator Kickboxing 2, puts on one heck of a striking clinic, looked completely different, shredded the legs of Howell, and just put on a show that not many people are familiar with. So I applaud Kerry Melendez for stepping up to the plate and improving her striking technique and getting the ring rust off 10 times better in this fight than she did in the last fight.
See, but I like that. Because Kerry Melendez, you see the difference between from last fight to this fight, and it's almost like night and day. But check this out. You want to talk about night and day? We're going to talk about Epic Fighting 31 that happened over the weekend in San Diego. You want to talk about night and day performance? You won't want to miss this. More with the DuCross Brothers Sports Warriors right here on YouTube.tv and on Blog Talk Radio. Be right back.
Excelsior and Paris Rex. Live long and prosper. Up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl. Not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the DuCross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DuCross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody, we are back. You're listening live right now to the DuCross Brothers, the Sports Warriors. I'm Tristan DuCross. Along my side, as always, is my partner in crime, the one and only Sean DuCross. Sean, huge week in MMA, let alone in amateur ranks. We got to sit inside, see two of the craziest flash finishes at Epic 31, a.k.a. Epic Fighting 31, in San Diego at the Four Point Sheraton. It went down. Still has us talking today. Mostly because we got to sit down and talk with Russ Edwards. Was the fact of Lacey Lodes, her evolution and her growth as a fighter, from when we saw her to her last fight at Epic 31. We always talk about growth and evolution in mixed martial arts. And it's how far you can take it to understand it. And the way that I see it is it's a rather simple thing to really think about it, because if you want to become good at something, you put in the work. And according to all the reports that we have, Lacey puts in work from when she leaves as a lawyer to when she goes in and fights in the cage. It is all work. It is every day. It is consistent. She listens to her coach, Russ Edwards. For 3 months, she put in hard work. And that hard work paid off to what they call make them wiggle. Lacey Lowe's, that's what we're going to call the new
new finisher.
You can thank Russ Edwards for that one.
Make her wiggle. So the next time she fights, we're going to have to start make sure that people or her corner, her people or family and friends start the chant of make her wiggle, make her wiggle. Because that's what happened in this fight with Helen Williams. When she won with the forearm to the throat, submission that you relatively do not see too often in MMA. But the fact is that you saw her fight before, and it left you scratching your head. Like, you saw something there with her, and that there was something there. That if she could put it together, she was going to be a beast. Because you hear how big of a game she had, but for whatever reason, it didn't happen. But it happened in this fight. And she made quick work of Helen Williams, and it was just one of those things that you saw evolution. You saw her evolve in the fight and end up stopping the fight in the second round, and it paid dividends. She came out and looked completely different. She came out, two solid leg kicks to start off the fight. Helen Williams know that, you know what, I'm here to bang. But at the same time, I knew my ground game was. And showed everybody that was in attendance what game she did have. And that's what kind of set the tone for the rest of the evening, was that there was a couple of good fights in the Epic 31 that did leave you going, okay, I buy that. And in that case, this was one of them. You and I tried very hard to get her the submission of the night because it was an important win. And to have a forearm submission that you don't see too often, you would have thought everybody else would have seen that, but unfortunately, submission tonight went to one of the Kim brothers with their arm bars. Again, the Kim brothers came out and finished their fight in relatively quick fashion with a little over a minute in both fights. Both finished with arm bars. You're beginning to wonder if there's anybody that can really challenge them. They're going a little bit further in each of their last previous fights. One of them owns the CFL title. They both own Epic Fighting titles. So they're starting to collect titles all around. You're beginning to wonder, when will one of them fight Joseph Williams? Joseph Williams is one of the bigger people in Southern California for the fight game. At what point do you start stepping up in competition and start looking the best of the best? Joseph Williams is classified as best of the best. So it's going to be interesting. And yes, I put emphasis on which one because it's hard to tell which one. So I just keep it simple. You can put two and two together and figure out which one I'm talking about.
But the Kim brothers, is it just me or do the Kim brothers actually feed off of each other? Because they both won by armbar.
Yeah. It's like, okay, one brother beats the other, beats his opponent 217. Then the other brother comes through the ropes and goes, "Hey, I got you. I'm gonna one up you. I'm gonna do the armbar to my guy, but beat him in lesser time." Yeah, won his fight, whichever one. Won his fight in a minute 14 seconds,
which was Josh Kim.
And Josh Kim continues to impress as he was the new Epic 145 champ. Who defeated Alex Gilbrew in a late switch of the two. So when you look at everything that was going on, the Kim brothers are impressive. Don't get me wrong. But I just don't see them at the top yet. They're feeding off the momentum. They've got momentum. They've got everything going for them. And they've got a wide range.
Down a peg a little bit. They've got such a wide range of talent that is ridiculous that you haven't seen in quite a while.
But bring it back a little bit. Bring back the hype a little bit. Because this is just amateur.
Be humble in your wins. Be humble in your defeat. Conor McGregor said it best.
Absolutely. So just bring it back just a tad.
Okay, so we got the Kims out of the way. Let's talk about what I wanted to classify as a weird change of the guard. Because we had Spike Carlisle take it on Jeremy... what was his name? Jeremy Fausto something or other?
Come on, Sean. Fado Russo, something like that. Jeremy Fado Russo.
Yeah.
I hope I didn't butcher his name, but it was Spike Carlo. He was supposed to fight Dante Stubbs, and I know what happened to Dante Stubbs. I would so would put that kid on blast. I really would. I'm literally biting my tongue at doing it.
But you feel bad for Spike Carlo, who went into camp
right
to
train
for Dante Stubbs.
You come in and you get a totally different opponent from what you were testing training for, and you get a guy like Jeremy Fado Russo, who was taller than Spike.
Bigger than Spike.
The difference in body mass was ridiculous. And something I'll give him credit for, because he took the fight on short notice, but Jeremy used his wrestling skills to the T, almost like Romier kind of style, that, well, I'm not going to outslug him. I won't be able to outfight him, but I'll outground him. And that's what Jeremy Fado Russo did. But if you're Spike Carlo, you had to have been ready for all aspects. That's when you know you're an elite fighter. When you can prepare for all outcomes, not just for the fighter. When you look at Spike Carlo, that was probably just the amateur ring rust, so to speak. And you've got to look at that fight. The amateur side of Spike Carlo came out in this fight with the inability to be prepared on all aspects. The fight game. Strong fighter, coming in 6-3, very aggressive, was on a 5-fight win streak. So, yeah, he did what he needed to do, but unfortunately just wasn't enough, and he lost to Fado Russo. But then you look across the board to the boys that apparently was in Tahiti. I was surprised. I was like, dude, we are well known in Tahiti. So you look across and you see that here dudes wasn't able to fight on this card. The Savage Squad debuted, I think, 2-1, I told you?
Yeah.
Henry Burns was an interesting heavyweight. And Henry Burns came and took on Edgar Barberi, who was the first time we saw him, wasn't that appealing? But he did slug. And that was entertaining. In this fight, Henry Burns came out, did solid leg kicks to Edgar Barberi, and then when the second round came up, they stopped the fight. The only thing I could think of, it was due to injury to Edgar Barberi that he took a vicious leg kick. And in that fight, he was limping.
Well, come on, dude. You heard the hit. You heard a couple crack against his leg, and he was limping. Noticeably limping.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, in amateur MMA, any type of injury like that, they will call a halt to it. Regardless, you think in the heart of hearts that you can still go. For health reasons and precautions, you're not going to allow it. But Henry Burns, man, this guy, if he could continue to grow, he will continue to establish himself. But one of the savage squads I feel so bad about is Tomahawk McComb.
Tomahawk.
Right? You say that and you just want to bury your head in the sand.
And I guess so
because he took to Facebook and everybody, including me, I was in on it. Because this guy, he's good. He's very, very talented. But sometimes
it's like
sometimes
he loses
the The mental game is far outweighs anything, okay, folks? If you've never been in the fight game or been around fighters, you'll never understand the mental preparation that goes into fighting. Tomahawk McComb posted on his Facebook that I'm putting you on blast like this, but it's just because I have the utmost respect for you, and that's what I even told you, was that he felt lost and felt he can no longer compete at the level that he can compete at. That he has to go back home, sit down, and reevaluate himself. What is it? That's the thing. All he needs to do is find out, go back home, regroup with your camp, figure out why you lose your mindset in the middle of fights. If he doesn't lose his mindset in the middle of the fight,
then he wins his fight. And we're not sitting here talking about him being 1-2 or now 1-2 now. You're talking about him being 3-1. It's just the mental preparation side, because the guy is far talented than anybody knows. The people of Team Arena, Charles Martinez in camp, here dudes in his camp, Tahiti, they're all good. There's just something missing. So Macomb is perfectly fine. Keep your head up. Get back to work. You'll figure out what you need to do to fix it. That's all it is. It's all about evolution and understanding the game.
It is a bump in the road for him.
Here dudes are ruined. Right. And here dudes is still going through his bumps in the roads, because he hasn't really yet finished. He had a health issue coming into Epic 31.
But he still goes out there.
And he still goes out there and performs.
Puts on a show.
So if anybody could take anything away from anybody, it's look at here, dude. He's been able to persevere and come out on top. So, Tomaho, keep your head up. Keep pushing forward. Keep trucking along. Because you got a bunch of that will stand by your side, pick you up when you're down, and tell you, let's go back to war.
Yeah. They're not called the Savage Squad for nothing.
And you see the Savage Squad, they're going to be savages. They're led by a savage. It's just, they couldn't have been named any better. Dude's named his team a good name. And bringing from Tahiti to stateside is something that everybody's going to want to watch. But we've talked about Joseph Williams, his excellent ability to adjust and to adapt with his team at XL Jiu-Jitsu. The one guy, these guys are so sick on the mat. Jamon Coleman, a.k.a. DJ, went ahead and put on another clinic like his XL Jiu-Jitsu partners seemingly do. The ability of his transitions from the float over to the back, his transitioning to get the hooks in. My God, this guy fluid. He is now, he came into the fight 2-0, now he's 3-0. He won with a guillotine in the third round. He's ridiculous. The guys over at XL are insane on the mat. You saw the heavyweight in the throwing Samoan? It's insane what these guys do on the mat in the grappling aspect.
When you're able to float between transitions and be able to go from a single leg to double leg to getting the back, to rotating his hips, to getting on top, to getting the guillotine choke, that all takes work. That all takes work. You don't want to face anybody right now from XL Jiu-Jitsu if you're not at the level that they are. Like, you have to be, okay, not to take anything away from 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu, if we would have a jiu-jitsu match between 10th Planet and XL right now, I'm taking DJ and Joseph Williams over any of those guys all day. Except for Boogie. Maybe Boogie. That guy's like a rubber band, but still. Those two guys right now are taking jiu-jitsu to a whole nother level and another experience, because they mesh it very well with mixed martial arts. So they're not just your typical jiu-jitsu guy. Who wouldn't pay to see XL Jiu-Jitsu versus 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu?
Right.
I would go see that. I would go see that matchup of jiu-jitsu between those two teams. That would be unique. That would be something that would be interesting, because of the fact that 10th Planet has so many great jiu-jitsu guys.
Right.
Elijah Harris, purple belt out of 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu. Like, I was telling people, I was like, dude, whatever you do, don't go to the mat with Elijah Harris. Elijah Harris got cracked with a left, dropped and said, well, I'm just going to keep the fight here. And that's all she wrote. Never allow a guy that is, his art is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. You don't put them on the ground. You don't. They have to do everything in their power to stand up. All these people that stand there and they fight, it's crazy. And we should probably get one of our boys that just popped up in the chat room, Jonathan King, who will be, again, August 26th, True Form Entertainment at the Anaheim Expo. Mr. One and Only, Klitsch Report himself, Jonathan King, will be doing the play-by-play for True Form Entertainment, TFE, is going down.
And that's the thing.
And your boys will also be there with True Form Entertainment. You want to be there August 26th in Anaheim, California. No doubt. And we got a chance today that hopefully we'll get it all sorted out later on today. But you'll see in the interview that we conducted with Josh Griggs today talking about True Form Entertainment, the fact that you got Andre Dede taking on Johnny Cisneros for the 185 title. That in itself is a standing bang competition you don't want to miss. Then you've got Lucas Roy taking on Keith Barry. KO? It's like, when you get this avenue and you get this opportunity to go to a big venue, you got to go for broke. You've got to go for broke. And that's what TFE is doing in Anaheim. August 26th is going to bring the house down and bring fans. It's going to be a pro and amateur fight card. So you're going to get to see some rising stars,
the grassroots development,
and also see the guys that are going to bring the fans in that are going to make you want to go, yes, I'm going to go see that.
Dude, great venue, great place. You can't ask for much more outside if you're not Bellator, UFC, or anything like that. And they are going to take and claim their home at the Anaheim Expo, which nobody else can, but they're going to do it. I really hope this is a show out, a sellout. Jonathan Arrows is the type of guy that's going to put on a war. But let's talk about
Tattoo.
Right.
He's going to be on the card. But one guy that has me very intrigued, and we talked about this with Josh Griggs earlier today, that Joe Daddy Stevenson is coming out of retirement to take on a guy that is absolutely a bruiser, a bad dude, and Gabriel. And Joe Daddy is going to come out of retirement one fight before this. He had kind of like a little fight here, but his true comeback tale has a fight coming up one I think it was like a couple months before August 26th. This is good for both of them, I think, because Joe, he has this fire and this burning sensation inside himself that since growing his team at Cobra Kai, you've seen that. Because we've seen him now a couple times at True Form Entertainment and talking to him. And a couple of the epic shows, we've seen him. You see that fire in his eyes again. No doubt. And I guess you at some point in time that when you've been fighting from such a young age,
right,
that you've got to kind of take a step back, let your body heal, to regroup, to get back to the grind. And if I'm Gabriel Milanagi, right, is that how you said it?
Yep.
So if you're Gabriel
or something, yeah,
yeah,
half a dozen or the other.
I'm not even pronouncing that. You got that. So I tried. If I failed, my apologies. I'll just call him Gabriel. So you look at Gabriel, and he's a stand-up striker with the ability to grapple and the ability to take the fight to the mat. You look at Joe Daddy Stevenson; he's the exact same thing: grappler, take it to the mat. You may see these two stand up and bang. Josh Griggs said you may very well see these two standing there pushing each other in the face. That's where we may be with this.
So it's going to be an interesting fight, but you're going to want to stay tuned to see what are the other fights on this card, because it's going to feature the up-and-comers, and it's going to feature the pros. So can't forget about the grassroots.
Right, so stay up with your boys, the DuCross Brothers Sports Warriors, on Twitter, at the DuCross Bros.
Hit us up on Facebook, Sean and Tristan DuCross. Like our fan page, DuCross Brothers. Check out our website at www.thehotspotshow.com. Until next time, we're out, and we're the Sports Warriors.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan DuCross.